So you train monkeys exclusively for quadriplegics?
An animal trained to follow commands.
How am I supposed to take care of it, Jeff?
The idea is that it's going to take care of you.
I've been so full of anger. I've had the most horrible thoughts lately.
George A. Romero, the master of terror and suspense.
You're not going to hurt me. I'm part of you.
Monkey Shines, a new into terror.
All right, here we go. Ready? 3 and 2. All right. This is a big one, Tony.
Yeah, listen, this is a big one. You know, we have a famous guest today.
We do. More famous than ever, actually. And we're going to get to that in a second because of the success level of what happened to him this year is outrageous. But first, I want to say that this is Rated P for Paranormal, the only podcast of its kind. There are plenty of film podcasts out there. There are plenty of paranormal podcasts out there, but there is no podcast where two working professionals rate and review paranormal themed material only. That's what we do. It's usually movies. It can be television. It can be a streaming show. When it has to do with paranormal, we're there. We're your spirit guides to paranormal pop culture. I'm Maddie Blake. That's Tony Arkin in Brooklyn. And whenever we do a film that has to do with an animal of any kind, we go to the big dog himself. Ladies and gentlemen, Puppy Bowl ref Dan Schachner. Dan, welcome to the show again.
It's an honor to be your animal correspondent. Thank you. Tony, great to see you, man. You look fantastic.
You look great. You have this real 2001 vibe going on behind you in the studio.
Yeah. Thank what you. Is that?
You have Thank a you. Really beautiful, like,
Amazon wall panels. Shirt.
You look fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going for that early. You're right. That California early 2000s vibe. Yeah, well, that was my heyday, boys. That's where Nailing it all That's went what, downhill from there.
Yeah, you wouldn't know what to look at you.
All of us.
Sorry, it's too bad it's a podcast. So it just sounds like a bunch of dirty bastards in a basement, no matter what we do.
Well, Tony's got like, all right, so you guys, can someone take a screen grab of what we look like? Tony, take a screen grab of this so we can release it on our social media.
All right, hold on 1 second.
At Rated Paranormal. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. And as I'm talking about this, look us up because I'm going to describe what we see on our screen here. And Dan, tell me if you think I'm wrong. He's right. It's kind of a postmodern sci-fi thing going on behind you. I have traditional VO voice studio with the foam, and I've got an Oak Island thing. Tony, I'm going to go with Island of Dr. Moreau. Like, you know, he's a mad genius, kind of 70s. Mm-hmm. But there's something wrong. Something bad's going on there. We don't
something
quite know what it is.
Definitely bad is going on. Yeah.
It looks like Donald Sutherland. You've got like a curtain behind you. It looks like Donald Sutherland's about to like open that curtain in just a sweater with no pants at any second with a cup of coffee.
It's what the whole apartment looks like. It's grim. It's grim in here.
Fun fact, this is my whole apartment.
This is it.
Dan, catch us up. Since the last time you were here, a new Puppy Bowl has aired. And this one was bigger than ever. Talk a little bit about the success of this one. Tony, when you hear these stats, it's mind blowing.
I'm not here I'm here to talk with you guys, first of all.
We'll get to the movie.
But, thank you. It was our biggest year ever. We broke our ratings records, but that wasn't hard. We started streaming this year on, all the streamers because you got to. So HBO Max picked us up and Discovery Plus picked us up. So.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so we like blew through our numbers, but that's not hard when, you know, major outlets take you and stream you. So
it's hard. It's really hard to do any of that.
Really hard. As the coach said in Moneyball, it's incredibly hard.
I had nothing to do with it. It was all the corporate people, but it was fun. It was nice to be on various. It was nice to give people other ways to see it, especially people who say, I'm not home at that time. I can't watch it. You know, it lives now on HBO Max, which is cool. So we had a great year. Next year's our 20th year.
Wow.
So we're going to – I don't know what we're going to do to top ourselves, but I imagine it's going to be an insane year. And since we were – this was the first year after 2 years of kind of being, you know, in this background in COVID rooms, it was nice to be out of the house. So it felt bigger. You know, it felt bigger than it had been. And, I'm glad to be on the other side of it.
That's so exciting. Are there plans afoot that you know about for the big 2-0?
Someone said I should finally adopt a dog. For Puppy Bowl 20.
Oh, this hasn't happened yet?
No. No.
All right. Well,
I fostered those dogs.
Those Amazon panels are not dog friendly.
No.
Behind him.
No, they will
any
melt.
Dog who came in contact with them would immediately pass.
Like deteriorate. So I'm thinking about it. We're also planning, I can't believe I'm saying this on the radio, but we're also thinking about moving out of the city. When I say out of the city, I mean out to where Tony lives, the country of Brooklyn.
The hamlet of Brooklyn.
The hamlet, yeah. The hamlet over the river. We're going to take the ferry, load our stuff on the ferry and cross that East River. But no, it's if we do move, assuming we do, then I think we'll have a little more space. And then a dog does seem like the natural, you know.
Well, you have the puppy bull riff can't not have a dog, I don't think.
Or should he get a dog?
It's pretty funny if he doesn't. I got to say, the backstory is kind of interesting.
Yeah, for 12
like, I have
years.
My fill of dogs.
That's
at work.
Right.
Coles to Newcastle.
That's been the angle, is that I foster dogs because I can't show any favoritism. And if I have one,
you're
dog,
the father of all dogs.
That's right. The Santa like, Claus has no children of his own.
Right. Well, this is exciting. Brooklyn. I mean, I know from being in Brooklyn that you can be in Brooklyn and it feels like you're in a suburb, like,
yes.
In the middle of nowhere in Westchester or something. So I look forward to you having a little lawn I can come over and defile.
Ugh. God.
You're ready for Brooklyn, and Brooklyn's ready for you.
Yeah, I am, man. I am as good as I've had a good time here. It's time to turn off the party lights and head out and get a yard. So hopefully that's in the plans. And yeah, maybe adopt a dog or at least continue fostering. But I don't know what's going to be 20 for 20 years. I do know it's going to be huge, and I know that I'm the only human, so unfortunately a lot of stuff falls on my shoulders. I really could use an assistant, so maybe. No joke. If one of you guys are available, I would love to have you come on board.
The likelihood is high that I will probably be available for yard work or whatever repairs or picking up poo from
the 10-yard.
Oh,
line.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can hire you.
Well, I've just looked at the price tag of all the colleges that my son Max has applied to. Oh. So Tony, I'm gonna have to fight you for that job.
Tell me about.
Because I need every extra stream of income I can get.
Is Mad Max on his way? Has he made a decision?
As this is being recorded, he got into 4 and 10 are still remaining. Mm-hmm. And the 10 that are remaining happen in the next 2 weeks as this is being recorded. Like, we'll know some stuff this week and we'll know some stuff by next week. And then that'll be it. If he gets into any one of the colleges that are to come, he's going to, blow off the ones he's got into and go with, because these 10 are his like tops.
Right.
So it's a waiting game at this point.
Good luck.
It's unbelievable. I keep getting hammered with waves of emotion, mm-hmm. just like little things. Like we came here with the sole intention of like getting Max through school and getting him to college. And now it's like here, it's over. He'll be gone in months. And so Colleen and I are looking at each other going like, what are we going to do? Ooh. So it's like a really weird time. It's an exciting time, but it's also a very emotional time because, yeah, I don't know what the hell we're going to do. Like, it's over.
The empty nest thing is real.
It really is. I used to laugh at people for it, but it's like, man, it's powerful. We can feel it coming. Colleen and I look at each other sometimes when he goes to do something, and we're just making dinner together, and I go, this is what it's going to be like. She's like, shut up.
I know.
It's going to be wild.
Yeah, I have no solve for that either. It's staring down. I got a younger one, so I got a couple more years of messiness and chaos in the house. But man,
what's up with Jason? He's still a year younger than Max, or no?
He's a year younger. Okay. Still wants to be a pilot, so he'll be looking at aviation schools, and hopefully he'll be flying us all around on like Delta Airlines in a couple of years.
We'll say, so cool.
Need a hookup? We'll have a pilot in the family.
So cool.
Or a flight attendant. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
The map is really hard on those landings. One other thing on the puppy bowl. Two things, I guess. Mm-hmm. Number one is, Tony, I'm sure you're aware of the amount of press that Danny has to do, but just give our audience an idea of like some of the media hits you did this year. The list is like unbelievable. You did everybody from Kelly Clarkson to
Drew Barrymore, The Today Show, Good Morning America, all of them. And I don't say that to my own.
No,
horse.
I asked. I
it's
love
just,
it.
It's just, it's wide and varied. And again, when you're the only human and the dogs don't speak yet, as far as I know. So, you got to be their spokesperson. So, in a lot of ways, that's the bigger part of the job. The puppy bowl itself, you kind of feel just like you're going through the paces. There's a lot of help on set. People tell you where to go and what to do. It's all sort of very choreographed. But, Not to say that the Pueblo is not real. It is a real football game. So let's not make any mistake, guys. Please need this leaked and people thinking that this is staged, because it is real football.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the press part is the longer, more arduous task. And that's where you really have to, like, that's where you earn your paycheck. So yeah, man, thanks.
Do you ever do a celebrity puppy ball where you play with the puppies of celebrities and they have to cheer their dogs on?
That's a genius idea, and we should copyright that.
You and I should go talk.
Yeah, we should talk.
After the show. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Perfect. This is great.
Have you ever kidnapped a puppy of a celebrity and held it for ransom?
I hear it's very lucrative. I hear
it is.
Apparently it is.
Didn't it happen to someone recently? Like, mm-hmm.
Lady Gaga's dog was,
yes, Lady Gaga
was kidnapped, and then they, but the funny part is they didn't realize it was her Frenchie. They were just stealing French bulldogs because they're very popular, and they would they could sell them for a couple of grand, and they realized it was Lady Gaga's. They're like, and they returned it without any.
Wow.
But yeah. So let that be a warning.
How shalalalalalo of those kidnappers.
Good. That was good. That was good. I walked right into that.
I am so sorry. Tony doesn't know what's happening right now.
I muted everything when you started talking about kids.
Good man. Smart. You're better off. See, Tony's on the other side of it because he never went through it.
No, I don't have any relationship to that at all.
But I guess, Tony, if your cats were to, you know, say graduate or go to Kitty Academy,
It's called Pussy's Cool.
It's shameful. It's absolutely shameful.
So say they go to PSU, right?
Yep.
On a full ride. And, you know, they're gone for 4 years, which is a long time. You would miss them. You know, the house would feel a little bit sad.
Yeah, I can relate to the idea of missing a person in your life or a family member that you don't get to see that you love. I do have a heart. I understand that.
You're being softy.
I just muted you when you were talking about your kids. That's all. I don't relate. Sorry. That's all. It's nothing personal.
Well, that's what kids do. They tune you out. So I'm used to.
We're so used to being.
I'm like your kid. I'm like, you guys had a kid. You got to deal with me.
Yeah. For sure.
Before we get to the movie. Now when Puppy Bowl ends, you must just like, do you go on vacation? Are you working? Have you done a lot since the Puppy Bowl? Are you working on anything, new projects? Are you allowed to do new projects?
I am. And I'm glad you asked that because it has been busy. People are like, what do you do in the off season? And the whole point of it is that, like, not only do I work during the off season, I do stuff that is near and dear to my heart during that time. And so, you know, Puppy Bowl is about exploring the animal-human bond. So I'm proud to say that I have starred and directed myself in a feature film.
Kidding.
Yeah.
I have no idea. This is so stealthy.
Yeah, man. It's coming out April 1st. So we're really excited. I have a promo actually with me that I'm happy to play for you guys. It's the first time it'll be heard. It has not been released yet.
Oh, that's an honor. I'd love to. I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
You wrote and starred in this.
It's a feature film.
My God. All right.
This is just a trailer. You know, you'll
get little snippets. This is exciting. Yeah.
All right. Let me see what I can do here.
I didn't expect this, Tony.
Yeah, that was pretty
quick. Tyler Murray's love life was in shambles.
I'm Tyler. What's your name?
Sorry, not interested.
Until his roommate came up with a plan to save it.
Dude, you need to adopt a dog.
A dog?
Total chick magnet.
Proving that every dog...
Hey, cute dog.
...has its day.
Bro, you were right. Mr. Winky's an awesome wingman.
Told ya.
But be careful what you wish for.
Let's move this to the bedroom.
Let me just close the door.
No, leave it open. Let Mr. Winky watch.
Because sometimes puppy love...
Shauna, why does your breath smell like kibble?
Tyler, we need to talk. I just don't think you get me, and there's only one little guy who does.
...can be more real than you think.
Wait, you're moving in with Mr. Winky? But why?
Man's best friend.
I trusted you, Mr. Winky!
This film is not yet rated.
Dan.
What do you guys think?
You made a movie.
Yeah.
You went and did it.
I did.
Look at you go, man. That's exciting.
Labor of love.
Writer director for you? First time? Yeah. Did you write the script as
First time writer director. Yeah. I wrote it up in about like 2.5 days. It was just an idea I had about, you know, a dog that is, you know, a wingman, but then betrays his master, you know.
Yeah. It sounds kind of like it's got a combination of elements here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not quite a rom-com. Starts off as a rom-com, and then it kind of ends in sort of a psychological thriller.
Right. I mean, that's the vibe that it gives off. But I don't know. You know, can't always trust trailers. Did you also cut the trailer and do that?
Cut the trailer. I'm kind of a one man show. Like I said, it was tough getting funding, but you know, we got it done. You know, blood, sweat, and tears. You know, a couple.
What was the title of the film again?
A Man's Best Friend. It's an ironic title. You know, I'm thinking about for a tagline. Maybe you guys can help me decide between the two. The first one I have. Well, I have three actually. One is The Love That Dare Not Speak Its Name.
The meaning behind that is great.
Yeah. Second, the doggone sweetest love story of the year.
Beautiful.
You know? And third, their love is possum. So I have to decide soon because we're, you know, April 1st is coming up. We got to get the print campaign going as well.
Who's playing the dog or is it animated?
The dog is, here's the thing about the dog. They're terrible actors and they really can't take direction. Even the quote unquote trained ones are terrible, but cats are actually very talented.
Wow. You're hearing this. This is an interesting scoop from coming from you.
I know.
So we have dressed a cat as a dog. Nobody knows that. That'll be in the IMDb trivia once it kind of comes out.
Okay. I mean, I've seen a lot of effects.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting the vibe that if you were trained, I might be able to discern the difference. I mean, unless you're using practicals and CGI at the same time.
Exactly right, Tony. Okay. We got a cat that's dressed in a dog suit, but the entire face is green screen.
Good.
And then for this intimacy scenes, as we call them, we had a green screen down by the crotch area. And, you know, because it's very hard to have even a cat playing a dog boner on command.
No, tell me about it.
So
I think you just stumbled upon another alternate title. Give a dog a bone. Let's get to the movie.
Yep.
Shall we?
I think we ought to.
I don't think it's going to get much better with this movie.
Hey, she turned it on all by herself. Got good taste. She loaded the tape and turned it on all by herself. Look at her, Marianne. Isn't she a riot?
Is that animal housebroken? Pretty much. She'll use her cage or the toilet when she can flush. But Neil probably step in something once in a while.
It's one thing I don't have to worry about.
Oh, my God. A cripple joke. You made a cripple joke. He's cured, huh?
This is season 7, episode 11 of Rated P for Paranormal. Of course, because it's an animal movie, we've brought in Dan Schachner, the Puppy Bowl ref. The movie is Monkey Shines by George Romero. Let's dive right in, fellas, to this monkey movie. I might be ready to proclaim this. We are 80-something episodes in now, Rated P for Paranormal. This might be my greatest watching experience of a film since we've been doing the podcast. Mostly because, did you hear that laugh Tony just did? I just pictured that the entire time I was watching it. And it was so blissful.
I do sometimes wish we could, you know, even if it's just the two of you guys, Mystery Science Theater, this whole podcast.
It's coming.
And have you just comment as the film is rolling. Because
So, I mean, and Tony, I imagine you know Romero's stuff. You knew about this movie's reputation or did you? I'm assuming that.
Yeah, I'd seen it before. I mean, I was aware of this movie and I was psyched to take another look at it. So yeah, it was really easy for me to decide on this one.
Okay, good. So this one jumped out at you from that.
It leapt at me like a rhesus monkey.
Spoke to you like a cappuccino monkey.
Yes.
So the first thing we get in this movie is a title card basically saying, you know, Boston University trains monkeys to help people who have disabilities.
Yeah.
So although it looks like monkeys are uncomfortable, no monkey was hurt or, you know, stress in any way, which to me just basically said, we hurt and scared the shit out of a bunch of monkeys because it's the 80s.
The whole no animals were harmed thing in American cinema is interesting and a varied history. The little bit that I know, again, listen, not to be funny, but on Puppy Bowl, we do have to say that as well.
Of course.
There are puppies crashing into one another. But no, it's interesting. It didn't come around until like for, you know, the first 20, 30 years of cinema, right? There was very little supervision over what happened to animals. And it was in 1939 that the film was Jesse James, starring Tyrone Power and Henry Fonda. And in this pivotal scene, a horse jumps off a cliff. A horse and his rider jump off a cliff. Horse falls into the water. The rider falls into the water. And obviously, they're supposed to swim away. That's how the movie made it look. But in reality, the horse did not die from the fall, but was so freaked out about the
stressed.
Drop. Yes. That it died afterwards.
Wow.
And so this is the key thing that we're hitting on here. The way studios got away with it, even prior to the start of the American Humane Society, putting the stamp on, was they said, no animals were harmed because they didn't get harmed under our watch. It happened after. So that's how they got away with it for so many years, where, there would be dozens of, in the old Western silent film era, all the way up to 1940, these, dozens upon dozens of horses, cows, animals would just die, and they would die afterwards. And the studios felt, absolved of any crime. So there you go.
I was doing a movie. Here's my quick anecdote about this whole topic is I was doing a movie. I had like two lines on a huge movie early in my career. I was having lunch at Craft Services with one of the producers, or not with him, but I was at a table with him.
Harvey,
very important person. Like,
this is what I didn't want to mention.
Isn't his production company doing your film, Danny?
Well, yes. I told you it was hard to get backers. We finally got one.
dogs. So I'm at a table, and this producer's there, and he's chatting with this woman. And she was very nice, nice little chat. She gets up and leaves, and the producer looks at me and goes, "She's the most powerful person on this set right now." And the director was like right there. And he goes, "She could shut this whole thing down." And I go, "Who?" And she was an MSPCA person. She was like the vet. And there were animals on set, big animals all over the place. He goes, "She's the one I got to keep happy." And he gets up and follows her away. And I was like, wow. It was just kind of like a,
it's crazy.
Firsthand example of how careful films are nowadays.
Like we say, how SAG has that hotline. Like if you abuse on set or any, please call this number, right? Even if you were to call that number and as an actor and be like, "I'm being abused because of A, B, and C on set," something is not right or safe. It will still take them time to come and shut that thing down.
Yeah.
But these American Humane Society, the film unit and the people in the TV unit, they can just shut it down in a second. Like be like, "Nope, it's not safe. We're done." That's it. It's crazy.
Well, thank goodness they didn't shut this down, because we would have lost what comes after the title sequence, which is two glorious butt shots in the first 60 seconds of a major motion picture.
Can anyone answer why it was necessary?
Oh,
directorial perspective. Anybody?
Well,
anybody?
I know why. I think we all know why the first butt shot was thought was necessary.
Mm hmm.
Think that was just money in the bank. They thought, hey, that's ticket sales.
But the yoga on the floor.
Split yoga on the floor the area rug was shocker.
Two things about these two butts. First of all, pop quiz.
Mm-hmm.
That actress, Janine Turner, can you pass the Sly Stallone test? Why is she related somehow to Sly Stallone? Six degrees of Sly? Tony, you know that I always shoehorn Sly Stallone into every movie we do.
Yeah, I should have thought of this. It was should have been at the forefront of my mind.
Did she play a girlfriend in Predator? That's Arnold.
He wasn't in that movie.
In Rambo. Did she play a love interest in one of his 80s or 90s films?
Yes, she is the girl in the classic Cliffhanger.
That's right.
One of the greatest opening scenes of all time. So when I was looking at her butt, the curve of the mountain of her butt, of course, I was immediately transported to the mountain ridges of Cliffhanger.
The other thing that she's well known for is Northern Exposure, which is another interesting riff on that whole idea. She's a really wonderful actress. She's lovely
phenomenal.
Person. She was in a great show, Northern Exposure. I had the chance to meet her. So I actually know a few people in this movie.
I do too.
So. Wow.
And Dan,
it's all fun and games until somebody texts me during this show. This is like, watch yourself.
Here's another connection to our guest host. And this is a synchronicity because it's a total accident. Dan, John Pankow, the star of this movie, one of the great stars of this movie, who plays Jeffrey, the scientist.
Oh, yeah. The brother. A scientist who I thought was the brother. Uh-huh.
He's kind of like one degree between you and I. Do you know how?
They both were repped by Buckwald mm-hmm. and went to lunch at Cinema Cafe.
That's probably possible.
It's possible.
John Pankow was a guest on my old podcast, The Actor's Grind, which you took over as host. And Tony, we used to do that podcast. You were a guest on it. Mm-hmm. I used to do that Actor's Grind podcast. He was the nicest person I think I've ever met. Like, he stayed and just laughed with us. And he kept saying to me, "You're going to do it. You're going to do it. You're going to make it. And you're going to be so famous."
That's a great Pankow imitation.
Right? He was the kindest. And I kept saying, "Well, you know, I'm trying." No. I can sense it in you. You are so talented. And I think you are going to. And I'm just like, I freaking love this man. So as soon as he popped on screen, I was like, "John Pankow." So there's another connection between us.
I did a play with Pankow.
Oh, wow. What'd you do? Are you allowed to say it?
I did a play called Medieval Play. The Kenneth Lonergan show.
I went and saw you in that. Another connection. And you had a busted shoulder at the time. And there's a lot of butt play in that movie, in that play.
Well, I wouldn't say butt play. There are butts in the show.
I mean,
show.
There's Whatever. A butt, butts in there, the play.
There were butts in seats, Maddie. That's all anybody's got to know.
There was no butt play. I'm sorry.
No.
There were butts in the play because you could see some.
There was some butts. Nudity in the play. Yes. Yeah, not right. me. I didn't do it. I wouldn't be caught dead doing that nonsense. But other people were, you know.
Was there Pankow bum?
No, might have been bum for a minute. I don't know. But there was the threat of bum constantly throughout this play, as you can imagine, its title.
That's right. Are you still in contact with him at all, Tony?
I haven't talked to John in a bit. But if I saw him in the street, we'd give each other a hug and go get some Italian food.
Well, if you do and when you do talk to him, tell him that he made
he's
such
the greatest.
A impact. I mean, he's the nicest oh, he's person the,
he's
the
most, he's one of the most positive people that you could meet. And I you know people say this about people, but Pankow is like literally as positive and cheerful and bright as you can be without being creepy. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, no, it's all sincere. He just like sincerely he said something like "Hey man, you know, it was a long time ago, but I remember him talking about his mood and that he often gets complimented on his mood. He said, "Hey man, we all have something to be bitchy about." He goes, "Why would I infect someone else with my being down?" He's like, let's, you know what I mean? He was just so infectiously positive. I just love
really
him.
Positive guy.
You know what I'd say to that though? I'd say, but you had no problem infecting those capuchin monkeys.
Right. That's a mm-hmm. good
with
point.
Your, with your
bring
yellow,
it back.
With
bring
your
it
yellow
back.
Serum. I would say that's that. Right. I would say that.
Make no distinction between the character and the person. I always do that. I always
okay, but I just want to make sure everybody understands that like the third shot in this movie, the very opening of this film.
Yeah,
let's get back to the is it Michael Beige? Is that how we pronounce his name? Beige or Jason Beige? Is that the star of this movie?
The main guy, Alan Mann.
No, the actor. The actor.
Yeah, right, Alan, right, yes, right. The main. Yes,
but his name
Alan
is
Mann.
Alan, right? I don't know.
Yeah, the character's Jason name Beige? Is Alan Mann. Jason Beige. Let's just call him.
I don't know.
You know what we should just call him is Bill Shatner, because that's about the level of.
So Bill Shatner dragging his bear behind over the area rug.
Yes.
In the most dramatic split you've ever seen. The
weirdest stretch.
I mean, he's really into that workout.
It was like from an ice skating training movie. Like it was that level of commitment to splitting.
Yeah.
But like he was a dog scooting on the rug. Like it literally looked. It's awful. It's an awful thing to see in the beginning of a movie. It's the kind of thing you really wonder.
Is it? He is toned. But let me tell you something. We've learned a lot about exercise and kinesiology since the time of this movie. And I'll tell you straight up, as a person that used to be into stretching, as a martial artist.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I know that what he was doing is not a good stretch. He was going like this.
Oh, I beg to differ. It is a good stretch.
He was jerking like, well, no,
don't come on.
Let me be.
This is an important time.
He was going like this. And we know that stretches are better if you're slowly static. You can't just like move.
You'll be jerking around. You don't want to do that.
Right. You know, Tony, the butt shot of him was very pound ridge.
You know, I had the same thought and I was going to bring it up to you because you could really kind of show those two sequences side by side and they'd make complete sense. Danny, both of them would reflect each other.
I saw the movie, but it's been a while. Can you refresh my memory as to the connect there?
So let me do this. Tony, with your permission.
Yeah.
I would like to announce right now that next week our episode will be on Pound Ridge. We will put it on our socials so you can watch it.
Okay.
And then we will come here and discuss about it. It's the movie that it's the short that Tony and I made together years ago.
Yep. Yep.
And so when I see things in movies, I see all the different little influences that Tony has in his mind come at different times. Like, oh, that is such a shot. And like, so much of it, I'm sure, is so subconscious. Like, you watch movies over the years and like, as an actor, you do it. So Tony had a scene where I'm like working out and it looks exactly like that scene. And what's odd too is Tony kept telling me to take my pants off and I wouldn't. And I didn't understand at the time why he was demanding it. But now I see.
Well, you can't make a proper reference without really committing to it, Maddie.
Maddie, is this the part? I'm sorry. Is this the clip? I remember it. You're like, you are doing like martial arts training.
Yes, I'm
in a
like
room.
Shirtless working out.
It's like silhouetted on. From
yes.
the back. Or,
yes, it's the same. And like the lighting and the kind of dank 70s, 80s quality of it. It's very Pound Ridge. And I immediately was like, ooh, I'm in.
Well, Jason Beige is an actor who he's exactly the type of guy who would be in that show.
Yes. Yes.
He would be in the A-team of that show.
Yes, yes, yes.
That kind of actor.
Yes.
And he clearly has the physicality for it. Wicked. He clearly can do, pretty much anything physically that you can imagine.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so interesting to put him in this chair the whole movie where he can't move. That was kind of cool, I thought.
What a body. Yeah. What a body on him.
He's an athlete. Looks like he was an athlete type. So, Maddie, had you seen this movie before? You asked us, had you seen it?
What horror movie used the monkey, was it? What horror movie used image, Tony?
That symbol, other than Close Encounters and this poster.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Close Encounter with a monkey, the scene.
Oh, there's that toy monkey in it.
That's what I'm thinking of. I thought another creepy movie used that image, but I guess I'm wrong.
Why don't you ask your computer friend?
ChatGPT? Yeah. I got an AI assistant.
Yeah, now that you have new friends,
I think ChatGPT wrote Dan's new movie for him.
Excuse me. Right. No,
that's rude. I think that
this all came from my brain after three bourbons. So
but he didn't use hands.
In
just
the movie.
Like the star of our movie, I had no use of my hands. And
right.
Feet. That's right.
Now I think that you're really onto something.
Thank you. Thank you.
We move on to meet our lead character, and he is obviously fit and in shape, and he gets in an accident, and that renders him unable to use.
I would stop here, though.
Yeah, I would too.
Okay,
because you're already blowing past some stuff. Yep. Because getting into an accident doesn't completely describe
that's
what
right.
happens to please, him, in my please. Opinion.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't trip over the curb, you know?
No, no. He goes for a morning jog or
was
run.
It a ballerina accident? Because that's kind of what it looked like.
It looked, I have pirouette written here in my notes, right under scrotum on rug, ?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the guy takes off it's like a cheerleader. It's like somebody being like, you know, tossed in the air, and he does this pirouette basically in the air after getting hit by a garbage truck.
And because he was dodging a dog that barked at him.
That's exactly.
Right.
I remember seeing that and taking some real comfort because I was like, oh, I can't discuss a movie without a dog in it. I hope a dog. Oh, there's a dog.
There it is.
German Shepherd. And I was like, bump.
On brand. Thank God.
Yes.
And the German Shepherd pops out like, rawr, rawr, and he, and what happens? He dodges it.
He flies into the air magically and then
twirl.
Lands gently, twirls. Yeah.
As you do when you get hit by a garbage truck, you twirl.
He spins. It's incredible.
And he had loaded himself up with bricks and ankle weights and arm weights. As I actually used to do, I used to wear ankle weights when I played basketball as a training mechanism. I'd play one half of a summer league game with the ankle weights on and then take them off at halftime. And you would feel like a new person.
I love that you think that that's showing off.
I know. It's cute. And the bricks, Maddie, you just shove them down your shorts?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep. No backpack.
No backpack. Yeah,
right.
You just get a really low slung fanny pack and
right
put
in
it in the front.
Strap. Yep.
You got to do some. You got to stitch some rigging in there, but it works.
Well, let's just say there was a lot of room.
The brick cracked as he fell.
It did.
Yeah, and metaphorically, perhaps.
You know what else is very metaphoric is that he was trying to avoid the dog, which he saw as the threat, but it was a human that was the threat in that garbage truck. Damn.
Oh, so you're
absolutely
so,
right.
That's good stuff.
And technology in the form of the truck, which is both that's the exactly things right that we're talking that's about exactly here. Right. There's a lot going on. Also, yeah. I just happen to love the fact that he goes on a morning jog and runs into two guys that he knows. He's like, hey,
he high fives the cyclist.
Yeah. See, I took that as that he didn't know them. It was like, hey, work out. You work out. I work out.
That's
yeah,
kind of what
I
it was
work
like.
Out too.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if that's what people who work out do.
It is true. Yes. It's like Jeep owners. We high beam each
you
other.
You gotta yeah say hello.
Uh-huh. Like dog owners, you know, we give each other that special little look like, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, did anyone notice when he's in surgery right after this accident, yeah, the really technical medical speak that we were treated to?
Oh, I believe his butt is as hairy as yours, he says to the female nurse.
I got that right. And then the surgeon is putting up the scans and he goes, this is an accident victim creamed by a truck. That was the line. I had to rewind it. And like, did the doctor just say this guy got creamed by a truck?
Which is good character foreshadowing to the Stanley Tucci character, who is not a great guy, right?
Right.
No, he's certainly not a great guy.
No.
He misdiagnosed and then did something worse.
And the irony is, what's his name? What's his last name?
I don't know.
Anybody?
Wiseman.
Dr. Wiseman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not very wise.
Mm-hmm.
More calculating mm-hmm and evil.
This movie's got some levels that, you know, you got to scratch to get all the deep.
It's a Rubik's Cube of deep and hidden and twisty meanings.
Killer monkeys.
Do we want to just go over these little details of things that we thought were ridiculous, or do we want to try to find some kind of general meaning or explain this to people or say what it is that we're talking about? Well, I'm not coming down on one end or the other.
The problem is, as I'm going through the plot, there's so many pieces of gold that we all want to jump on. So I'll just continue and then we'll go back.
Okay.
So basically he gets in this accident. He cannot use his arms or his legs. His friend, played by John Pankow, basically intervenes, getting him a monkey mm-hmm that is trained to help people like him who have no use of their limbs. And a relationship develops that becomes quite paranormal, actually. We're talking about a paranormal connection between an animal and a human. So this fits very well into our podcast territory. And of course, it devolves into something a little more sinister than what we think. And then it ends in this traumatic event where people die and the monkey is evil and making him, they exchange emotions. And that's the basics of the plot. There is actually some stuff here that is worth exploring in terms of theme, I think. But it's probably going to, what you just heard us do is probably going to kind of be more of it because there's just so much. I mean, I had a ball watching this. There, one of the complaints on it was too long. I'm like, I was so pissed when it was over. I was like, what?
Yeah.
That was 2 hours?
You know, this would have been, it was a feature film, right? This would have been a great movie of the week. Unlike network TV on a Sunday night, you know, on ABC in the 80s, you would have watched this and turned it on after watching MASH or whatever the hell and been like, this is mad. This will pass the hours. This
it's very not- Trilogy of Terror. Isn't that what it was called, Tony?
Oh,
that one,
yeah.
The Tiki. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I wanted to bring it up only because sadly that shows where this misses. Mm. I mean, if you watched the Karen Black movie right now and then you compared them, you'd kind of probably be going, why didn't they use any of that in Monkey Shines? I mean, the idea that.
Because the idea.
The premise is it's so simple.
Yeah.
And it's great if you just decide, I'm going to make a really bad B movie here. Mm. And it's about a killer monkey in the house. So get as much suspense out of that central idea as you can. Where is the monkey? Where it could be anywhere. What's it going to do next? Because you can't really see it and it's small, and really capitalize on that thing that you can't mm-hmm see. And they don't really make good on that at all here. And Romero kind of decides to lean into the Like he's almost making like a drama, which I applaud him for. Like he's taking these characters seriously to the point where he kind of almost doesn't pay enough attention to the fact that he's making a killer monkey movie. Like,
yeah, that's right.
You know, just go a little bit more into the giallo craziness of this and less, you know, backstories with relationships. I mean, I'm usually the one saying the opposite, but
you're right.
Didn't need it.
Roger Ebert had a review of it and he said something like, there's a good little 90 minute movie in here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, if he had just stripped away exactly to your point, Tony, like, he's like, I want to see more of the monkey and the terror and the horror. He's like, cause that's what this thing is.
Yeah.
And he goes, it just got so bogged down in this unnecessary stuff. I remember making movies with my friends in high school. We used to make, you know, video movies. And I never thought I was going to do any of this for a living. I just thought it was fun to make parody videos with my friends. But we were trying to do this serious scene, and a character came on, one of my buddies, and he just goes like, hi, I'm Dr. Smith. I was his doctor for 5 years, and walks away. And I'm like, huh, that's probably not like the best way to do it. And then I was watching this movie, and in one of the first scenes when he comes home in the wheelchair, his former coach goes up to Stanley Tucci character and goes, hi, I was Alan's coach. I was Alan's coach. And just walks away. Thanks. That's his coach.
Yeah.
It was just great.
We get all the info very clearly spelled out.
My other favorite couple of lines of dialogue is when he's talking to John Pankow and he goes, Linda's going to leave me, you know, after he got the accident. And he goes, well, if she walks out on you, F her. And he goes, I can't.
But then he could at the end, which is kind of
We don't know what was going on.
Maddie.
Really. I think
I don't know. Did you see the unrated? Did you see the direct extended director's cut of this?
You're going to direct that, aren't you?
I will. I'm happy to. Right after Give a Dog a Bonus.
I'm happy to. That's the proper response. I am happy to.
I thought there were some really interesting things here. This is, you know, there's always, I thought there were some really interesting moments about him trying to learn to live with this new condition. And I thought that was handled actually really well. And it was kind of powerful, right?
I would have liked more on his like at home Alexa system.
Yeah. It was very early 80s, but it was cool.
You know, using the lights with his voice, running the battery, all that. I liked the phone cards. That was cool. Yeah.
Yes. Like pre monkey, like watching him and then him kind of coming to the realization of what his life was going to be like and saying, no, thanks. I'm out. I don't want this life. I mean, I thought that was really kind of well done in between there. It was just kind of like sandwiched in there. But there were some moments that I thought were worthy of exploring and kind of interesting. And then when the monkey gets involved with that process, like I could have watched 90 minutes of just the monkey doing household chores. I was, when he was washing windows,
then I was like, oh, more of this montage, please.
I don't think I've ever been that happy watching a movie. Like,
well, it's really fantastic. This monkey's great. Saves the picture. This monkey saves the movie.
Yeah. Let's call her by her name. Okay. Ellie is her name, I think.
Sorry.
Ellie, which I think was played by a boy named Boo.
Oh, okay.
A boy monkey named Boo.
Okay.
Yeah. They had to switch him. They had to switch. There were several monkeys from what I read, and even a robotic monkey that they use for certain shots. Yes. Like when you see the monkey pop up and it's behind, you're seeing the back of its head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was like a robot monkey they built. Yeah. Like a puppet monkey.
Yeah. Monkeys never let you see the back of their head. So that's a way you can.
Yeah. That's how you can tell. Law of the jungle.
Look, I think you can really see the weirdness of this movie in one simple idea. Mm. George Romero, who I love the man. I adore him. I love how he worked. I love his ethic. His movies are great. Even the ones I don't think are any good. He sells the hardest thing to sell. He sells perfectly. I believe this monkey completely. I believed everything about it. I thought, I knew what it was thinking. I knew what it was hiding and when it was hiding stuff. I believed its jealousy and its increasing level of insanity. I believed that character more than I believed in like Gollum in the Lord of the Rings.
Totally.
That's a real monkey. You're trying to get a performance out of this thing and somehow make this work. out of take after take of horrible days of just get the monkey to please do something.
Mm-hmm. Just look some way.
Mm-hmm. And he sold that, but he can't sell like the simplest human interactions in this movie. Like where you believe that people are talking at a party.
Yeah.
Where you believe somebody gets introduced and like you said, and says, ha, you know, and they break down in a way that sounds, it just seems it's written so falsely.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about it and I'm like, this was a studio movie. This was his first, Romero's first kind of studio picture.
Like big budget.
Bigger budget. I don't know how big. I don't really
7 read million, the numbers, actually, but I did that research. 7 million.
More than he'd had. And I think he was trying to be a respectable filmmaker.
Yeah.
Which I think is the downfall of this movie.
Yeah.
And it left at the door all the stuff that made his earlier movies so watchably crazy, was that you'd have this kind of stilted soap opera kind of vibe, but then these outbursts of crazy violence that you'd never seen before, which was realer than the actors. So that was this weird kind of pop art thing that he just wasn't working at his strengths here. So he
wasn't
just
doing what he's good at.
Wanted to make character dramas.
Yeah.
But he wasn't as good at that as making this monkey completely, absolutely realistic. And I just felt like he could have built a better movie around that character because it was so good. That part of it.
You're exactly right. In fact, I think the most touching scene in the film is when he first meets the monkey. They have this exchange where, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but it was like an Academy Award winning performance from the monkey. And I'm not being facetious. It was like it was the actor's best moment as well. Way better than anything he did with any human in that movie. They look at each other and the monkey's looking at him like longingly, like, and he says to the monkey, I'd love to play with you, but I can't. Right. And the monkey's just staring at him like, please, please, please. And I'm like, oh my God, that was like really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so you're exactly right, Tony. It's like he did the hard part, you know, which is making the monkey a real character, and every reaction the monkey does is right
every
on.
Way, yeah.
It looks evil. It looks happy. It looks sad. It looks confused. It looks teasing. And then the people, nothing believable happens.
And the plot, it was like the ESP thing. Like, I'm like, why are we going there?
Yeah.
Monkey in the house with the razor blade. That's enough.
Perfect.
Yeah. Right. Right. Perfect.
That was my takeaway on it in a general scope. Now going through and combing through, there's gold and then there's just gold craziness. Crazy.
Who did the score in this movie? Because it was difficult. The score is unique.
I have written about it's David Shire, I think.
Mm. Right,
he's done some great stuff, but
it fits hand in hand with what you're talking about, Tony. That missing the mark of the emotional human scenes are overwrought with the music's overwrought. The scary scenes, it's like a overdone. Cliched series, and then the monkey scenes are almost ruined, but they're so good they're not by this kind of playful music of the monkey. This
it
is the
really
yes
botches it. This was a studio recut. I know they famously took it away from Romero and recut the movie, and Romero kind of stepped away. He doesn't love it as much as he could because they changed his vision. And I'm thinking that maybe that score was part of the recut.
Okay.
Because it feels like they're like, well, there's a monkey. It should be funny. And then they're like, make the music funny and then we'll be funny.
Yeah.
Because David Shire's written some great stuff, including like, you know, the score for Zodiac and The Conversation and All the President's Men and stuff. So
I bet they
felt like he was told to make it silly monkey music, and he did, because it's bad.
As I hear us all discuss this, the sense I'm getting, stay with me on this, is that it really is two movies in the same place, and they certainly don't fit together. But like, if you had just take the monkey away for a minute, just stay with me on this, and you get a quadriplegic man, tragic accident, his wife leaves him for the doctor, and that's huge. There's a little bit of revenge play there between his, his friend, Pankow's character. The cabin gets burned down. You know, there was a lot in there that could have, I know we said soap opera, but it, you know, still, it was interesting enough as, again, a movie of the week, as a drama. But then the monkey part of it, was put throughout, and again, the music doesn't help, but it almost does feel like two separate movies or two separate tracks that very rarely kind of, you know, meet in the middle. And I wish they'd had a little bit more often. Like, the monkey sets fire to the cabin while Wiseman and his wife are doing it. That could have been something else entirely, but it was the monkey, and I would have liked to have, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
But may I say, the monkey sets fire to the two people making love immediately after we've just watched him lick and swap literal spit with our lead character in this, like, French kiss weird monkey. And I'm just going, like, now I want, like, that is George Romero to me, like, right? Mm-hmm. Tony, to your point. Yeah. So it's like, if it had been 45 minutes of that, like, it would be one of the great horror, fun, crazy movies of all time. It would be like right up there, but there was just so much other stuff that, like, so that scene from the monkey doing that to him into the fire, into the set them on fire. I'm like, this is so great.
That's not the stuff that rang. You know, I just feel like as much as I like Pankow, we spend too much time in the laboratory, too Absolutely. Much time. And because that whole subplot to me, that whole plot actually is superfluous because.
You're right. As much as I love Stephen Root, I would have loved to know more about what he's doing in the movie. What's Milton from Office Space doing?
Right. I mean, if you're going to go there, make that stuff more believable and somehow connected. I bought the monkey's whole emotional life, but I didn't buy this drug or the serum or what it was doing or how it connected people. I just felt it was like.
The serum, I wrote this in my notes, is the fatal flaw of this movie. The serum is the fatal flaw of this movie because them developing some sort of paranormal connection is so Stephen King, and Stephen King would not necessarily tell us where that came from.
Yeah.
The less we know, the better.
Yeah.
And so we didn't need a serum to try to explain why they had the psychic connection. All it did was confuse things. And yeah, that lab, those lab scenes. Can no one ever, ever, ever again sing Bottles of Beer on the Wall in a film? Nobody sings it in real life.
They should never have done it in the first place.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt bad for Johnny in that.
Yeah,
in that scene.
None of that is his fault. He's a brilliant actor.
No.
But yeah, you're exactly right. You're both right. And I literally said that. It's the fatal flaw.
Remove the drugs, though, and then you do remove the best, maybe for me, the single best moment, which is a bit of monkey acting.
Mm.
When he denies her the syringe of drugs that she's now become addicted to, and she slams her hand down on the table.
Yes.
And she has this total junkie freak out moment.
Yes. Yeah. And he goes, oh, I made you a junkie.
Yeah, exactly.
So
the way she's demanding it and the way that they get her to slam, like, it sells that moment so well. So that's like brilliant. But other than that, so what? You lose that moment. There could have been a more supernatural, simpler explanation to it, which I would have bought, and it would have saved time and energy for attacking monkey inside house.
I feel like someone like William Friedkin, for example, just the fact that they're coming out of a lab where they've been experimented on, all he would have done is show close-ups of those monkeys' faces in their cages and then have one released out in the public. And then all this
we know something happened to
him. We know something bad happened in there.
That's,
right?
That would have been cool.
So it didn't trust, as we've said before, Tony, many times this podcast, it didn't trust what it had. And it
didn't trust it. And there's dialogue that proves it. There's a line where, again, Jeffrey Pankow's character is asked straight up, like, well, why'd you do it with the serum? He's like, I don't know. At first I wanted to help you. And then he doesn't answer the question. He is straight up asked, why did you do this?
I don't know. And the screenwriter's going to hand me my sides. Hold on.
Right. Yeah. There was no, and I'm waiting. And as a viewer, I'm okay. Yeah. First you wanted to help your friend. And then, he goes, and then I don't know. He literally says something to the effect of, I don't know. I don't know why. Yeah. That's so weak.
Well, it's also weak, for instance, just to have like, I love the phone system he has.
Yep.
With the
I did
chip.
Like the phone system, the cards. Yeah.
That was a great device, and I thought maybe a missed opportunity that could have been built into a suspense thing. The way that phone worked was so
all
cool.
The tech
could have been really better used. You're right, Dan. That really was, could have been definitely talked about more and then come back, you know, to play into the plot or to the end in some way. But my question is like, why does he have Linda's phone card in there?
His ex. Yeah.
Right. Not just his ex, the woman who ripped his heart out and he tried to kill himself over and all of this.
Yeah.
And now here's my point. I believe he might still have that card, but would he have it out? And why wouldn't you then deepen that thing and try to make that, like, don't just have the card out because it's convenient. You've just established this whole backstory with these people that he would never call her under any circumstances, right?
Right.
So,
although there is a, I can't believe I completely agree with you. I'm not arguing for it, but they do address that in a sneaky way. She, when the monkey calls her, she says to the Stanley Tucci character, who was it? He goes, they called and hung up. She goes, I hate when that happens. So you get the inference.
He's been calling her
and hanging up, which is possibly a defense of it.
That's fine because you could have both things. That's not what I'm saying. The point is, why would he have the card in a stack of six friends that he'd have available to call? She's not there. So I'm just saying it's that little detail, which means they didn't really think about characters as much. I mean, if you're going to make a movie with this much character stuff in it, again, write it a little bit tighter.
Two different movies. It was two, like, again, if you just focused on the quadriplegic movie, again, no monkey.
Could have been great.
And you had this crappy nurse Ratchet, he called her, with the parakeet, right?
Yeah.
And
that's a great
whole other angle to explore.
Yeah, then it's like a misery with paranormal. Yes. But that nurse character is interesting because she is angry at him right off the bat good reason.
She
said, they
asked her, like, oh, thanks for helping. And she goes, that's my burden that God gave me.
Yes, that's the quote. I wrote it down. She's like, at this point, he's done nothing but be quadriplegic.
Right.
That's all he's done. And she's the nurse whose profession is to help him. It's right after the party welcoming him home.
Yes.
She goes, you're the nurse. He goes, that is the curse that God gave me. So I'm like, what? Why is she still there? Fire her.
That was very Stephen King. That felt like very Rip.
Yeah,
well, like, almost all of his movies have. She seemed like a fundamentalist, like a somewhat, you know, firebrand religious person. But
would have loved to explore that.
But, like, you know, and we were given the opportunity to, and yet we didn't get those things.
God, give me strength.
Get rid of that bird, Marianne. Get rid of that bird, or so help me.
You what?
Well, when the nurse leaves, Mom takes over. That's a whole other angle to explore, right? Mom. Right.
Oh, Mom.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mom.
Listen.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick little break.
Okay.
Hopefully, Danny is not working on another film, because we don't want to go down that road. And we're going to take a little break. We're going to tell you that our top three coming up in the second half of this podcast is top three little animal attacks in film history. The top three tiny animal attacks in film history. We're going to get to the final act of this film. We're going to talk favorite lines, favorite moments, all that when P4P continues. So we're in the home stretch here with this film. We haven't
even gotten to bath time yet.
Oh, boy.
Well, let's talk about that, because this goes. It was on my favorite scene list. But when we last left, we were talking about Mom, the Mom character. Tony, looks like you got some opinions on the Mom character.
Well, look, first of all, I know Joyce Van Patten. And she's a great actress and she's fantastic. And she's actually, I think, really great in this movie, but it's the direction is so weird in it that I don't know if she knew what was happening. I don't know if she knew what she was hired to be in when she got to the set.
I would totally agree with that.
This woman has been in everything. I mean, this woman has been in more stuff than you can possibly imagine, from Gunsmoke, Outer Limits, Twilight Zone, Perry Mason, Andy Griffith, Odd Couple, Hawaii Five-0, Mannix. Dick Van Dyke show.
There are rumors that she's going to make an appearance in Man's Best Friend.
Talking to her people.
She's tough to negotiate with.
Is she going to bathe any adults in the movie, Dan, by chance?
I don't mean, you know, look. Now we can, you know, this is who we're talking about, though. This is where we're at. Yeah. We have this woman, this poor woman, has to come in and do this stuff, bathing her son. The attitude, the kind of the fact that Mike, that Jason Bage plays it kind of morose.
Yeah.
It's like,
he's gonna there's a scene.
It's so funny.
Where they cut back to him. He's like, mother. Mother, he's just full body shot him sitting in the swing naked. Yeah.
Slumped.
I couldn't. He slumped.
Slumped down.
I go, mom, mother.
Oh, dear God, it's so awful and so mother. Badly kind of done. And you know, like, it's such an uncomfortable scene. It would be really uncomfortable if it was handled brilliantly,
right,
you know, in a brilliantly written scene. It would be a good scene to show, you know, family weirdness, and I could see actors really being able to go there with a good director and stuff. But this is like an example of, it's like, well, we've got an hour, we're losing the light, and we haven't rehearsed. You guys don't need to rehearse, right? We can just do this.
Hey, I need
and
to
like,
reverse,
you know, first take's always the best anyway. Let's just do this. And sometimes it just doesn't happen.
We need a reverse shot of him so we can see he's in the Swiss bath seat, guys. Let's turn the camera around. it was all filmed like it was a shot of them, but it was like cropped about cowboy and she's sponge bathing him. Yeah. And then that wide shot of him just alone sitting in that thing above the tub is one of just the most incredibly gonzo film shots I've ever seen in movie history.
There could have been a whole sequence of building that bathtub room. I mean, they had to get an arm and that swings over the bathtub, and they didn't show any of that.
No. It's addressed in the beginning. He says to Pankow, he goes, I don't know how much mom spent on this, on this whole setup. That's all it said about it. Done.
The whole setup, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, mom has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, the voice activated system, the electric wheelchair,
And here's something I like about it is, again, if the movie had concentrated on this type of thing, he's unnecessarily raging at the one person who's helping him and loves him and supports him, the mom, because of the relationship with the monkey. And she doesn't understand that. So his bits of rage, perhaps, I don't know, I see like a Christopher Walken in that role. And it would be incredibly powerful in a sense. It just wasn't handled. Again, the monkey stuff between him and the monkey was better than what he gave to the mom and what she gave him back.
Can you hear me, mother? Mother, can you hear me? Mother, close your door. Lock it shut.
But I just thought that was a very interesting notion. And then he's like catching himself saying, you know, like when he bursts rage at his mom.
Yeah.
And then he realizes this isn't me. This is this weird monkey thing. And he tries to like, mother, mother, and like apologize to her. But she's already too hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. It just wasn't handled well enough with a deft enough touch.
Yeah. I don't know why it's sitting there in my monkey attack movie. I'm like, I just,
well, that's the thing. Why is it even?
I just wanted to see monkey shines.
That's right.
Yeah. But it could have been a good way to show, if you did what we said before, and if you just focused on there's a paranormal connection to him and the evil monkey, it could have been a sly way to show
all of that. I want out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want him growing fangs. I don't need him to associate with the monkey. I don't need it to be about the primal inner monkey or the primal thing. Sure. They didn't make a good case for any of that.
No.
They didn't explore it enough. And so just don't put it in. Just have this incredible monkey. Do monkey stuff.
They add fangs to our lead?
Yeah,
Okay, yeah.
In certain shots, his inner monkey was his inner primal.
I actually thought that was kind of cool, but I was like, "Those are real teeth." Go ahead, Danny.
No, if they had more of that E.T. and Elliot telekinetic relationship, but it was more subtle, you know,
and
I would have bought it.
I would have bought it. You know,
like, by the love, but that she has for him.
Sure, she loves him. She turns on the Ella Fitzgerald on the tape deck, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay. I would have loved more of that. Frankly, I thought a great missed opportunity was just before the mom stuff, when I think he sends Ellie away. He says to Jeffrey, "You know, take her away. You know, she's dangerous." And then he finally has alone time with Melanie, the blonde girl.
Yeah.
You know, who's been.
Yeah.
And they make love, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And yes, to your point, Maddie, I'm not sure how they do it, but they do it.
Right.
They do it in a fake hotel room surrounded by the shrieks of monkeys.
Yes.
That's how they do it.
Yeah. The sound effect of monkey screaming, but she's got the Swiss seat thing that he has. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that came from.
Right. Well, so fun moment. I was praying that Ella would burst in through the door and just stab her through the eye.
Yes.
And that would have been great.
Yeah.
Again, two different movies that would have blended them beautifully.
But wouldn't that have been much more Romero?
Yeah.
Like that would have been the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That it never quake. I mean, he has Tom Savini working on this movie. Like, what, you know, Tom Savini and the makeup artist who did all the gore stuff and like.
And we see none of that really.
It's not really in there.
No.
That's not why I go to the movies, but.
Right. No.
Right. Right.
But I mean, you've got a movie about a killer monkey. You'd think when you're working with
Tom Savini and you're making movies about a guy who's crying and about relationships and like
a monkey. You have a monkey with fangs who's evil and we don't see any blood or anything. So we drive this final act home. It all culminates in a terrible incident at the house. Mm. We won't spoil it, but it ends in, again, what might be one of my top scenes of all time, how the monkey is handled by our lead in his chair, his only defense being his own mouth.
His mouth.
Which is used throughout the movie. I mean, that shot is just, I had never seen it.
It's the best GIF shot you've ever seen. It's fantastic.
And now, of course, after seeing it, I look it up and it's like on every horror list and people just love it and they reference it. I had somehow missed it. It just passed me by. And all I heard again, as I started the podcast, I'll end it. All I heard was Tony's laugh at me. You talk about a monkey connection, a psychic connection. I heard and saw the movie through Tony's eyes watching me.
Yeah.
Watch it for the first time, and I'm crying laughing because I'm seeing Tony see me watch it for the first time. It was very, very on
the
nose.
That's why you guys are great hosts. Seriously, spoken as a fan of the show, because you can kind of speak for each other and imagine each other in those moments. Oh, you got to do a Mystery Science Theater version of
we
of
do
a movie. One time, just once.
We do. You can do.
We
it
haven't
now.
Ruined movies enough.
Right.
You have to ruin them even.
Oh,
more.
My.
Oh. Come on. It's like a pub.
So, I mean, you guys share your thoughts on that scene.
Why does she pee on him for a moment?
Yeah.
Dominance?
She pees on him for a good moment.
It's like a stream. Yeah, it was a long stream.
Oh, well. There is a line
lingering, a very long lingering moment.
There is a line earlier when she says we have to use female monkeys because the male monkeys urinate to mark their territory.
Yeah.
Ooh, so good catch, Maddie.
Maybe
it's been a boy monkey the whole time.
Ooh.
I don't know.
I took it as I'm marking my territory and you're mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I did too.
Nobody else gets you.
Yeah. Yeah. I for sure
but
felt
I
that
like
way.
That. It could
which,
be.
Which reflects back onto the scrotum rug question I had at the beginning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I think he was marking his territory. No, I mean, really, let's be honest. Romero would see something, would be doing this for a reason. You don't have a character just not wear pants and do that without thinking about
it. Yes, you do when you say, oh, I have like a really hot jacked actor. And it's 1988, and I can get some.
He could have like little Sharper Image thong sweats on, and it would be the same level
effect.
Of excitement for you.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't really be saying the same thing. It's like he was clearly marking his territory.
All I know is I've never wanted to be an Oriental rug more in my life. Who's with me, fellas?
And the movie is The movie's bookended by the image of a scalpel slicing down his back. Same shot twice.
Yes.
The beginning and the end.
Interesting.
Well, yeah. Well, they ran out of time and film.
Well, I mean,
and
we know how many, they use the same exact shot. I'm sure
it's the same shot.
Well, you know how many times that's happened in spinal surgery history, that the secret spinal injury is missed by the getting hit by the truck thing, and then
right.
all I have to do is just another that's surgery. That's what the
second opinion doctor says. That I'm like, so wait, confusing. What? It's congenital? It's just a coincidence that you happen to be paralyzed after the truck accident? Okay.
But then somehow it's Tucci's fault because he did this to him because he saw it and didn't fix it. Or what would have been more believable is you shouldn't have been paralyzed by this accident. This looks like it was cut. This looks like your spinal column was cut here.
Right
now, that's digestible, believable, and he's a bad guy.
So much good stuff to mine there without the monkey. And great stuff to mine if it was monkey attack, you know, for an hour and a half.
But so Dana, you're saying that basically you'd like to see this is a John Voight movie, like this is Coming Home.
I would. I would have liked to find those moments, more of those moments in the middle where those two things, the main character, wargs, right? You guys watch Game of Thrones, Brandon Stark. He wargs.
No, I don't know. I don't know the show.
I saw it.
So the whole thing in Game of Thrones, it was like the last four seasons were about this, the Starks, the families, the main kids, most of them could warg, meaning they could, you know, connect with an animal. And then so the kid was paralyzed and, wow, maybe they got their inspiration from Monkey Shines. And the kid, Brandon Stark, was paralyzed and he would warg, meaning he would go into the soul of a raven and then go fly around and be able to see the world around them. And of course, that helped them in battle and et cetera, et cetera. It was the same thing there. Give me a little more on that. That was fascinating. Because don't we get the POV of the monkey at one point running around?
Yeah, we have a couple of great POV shots, from a Sam Raimi movie.
And he can see it. And he can see it too. So I, again, would have liked more of that.
Right. Didn't capitalize on that part. That's where, again, we're in the lab too much. Just we're in the lab and meeting this new actress who's going to be the love interest that really doesn't really go anywhere. It's kind of like a little bit superfluous if that cut is what was reflected in Romero's first cut. I don't think his cut exists. This is a studio cut that, again, he apparently was unhappy with. However, I'm sure directors say that all the time about movies that don't do well. Or are badly reviewed.
There is an alternate ending on the Blu-ray DVD release.
That wouldn't solve the problem.
No, but I read very quickly about it. I don't remember if it was that Romero wanted the happy ending or didn't. He probably didn't.
Oh, didn't.
But so it sat in the vaults for years, and I don't know if it was 2014 or something like that when they released the Blu-ray DVD. The alternate ending is on that DVD, so if anyone's curious, you can go watch that. Why don't we do favorite scenes? Mm. Everybody go around, and we've mentioned some, but there's got to be a couple that we haven't hit or that you want to do a little bit of a deeper dive on.
Deeper dive. I don't know if we can go any deeper, guys.
I can tell you that the licking is his mouth and the like actual trail of spit that goes between the two, the monkey and the guy is just, I mean, I don't, I and then the, him sitting in the tub in the seat,
the sad,
naked, dejected, sad, with the slumped shoulders is just, amazing.
Yeah.
Great choices.
I like in the beginning that Jeffrey's walk into the lab, in case, you know, you couldn't understand what was going on, he's holding a container that says live human tissue. In
live.
Like giant. It's like Arial font, you know, big block letters.
Yes.
Could not be more hit you over
it's
the
like
head.
From Reanimator. It's like from a completely different kind
it
of movie.
It looks like spam when he dumps it out. And then how many labs? I could be totally wrong on this. I'm not a scientist. I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. The outside of the lab literally says experimental lab. Like, are we that on the nose with like?
There was too much on the nose, right? And the second favorite scene was the dialogue when Jeffrey confronts the. Now that I think of it, Jeffrey was involved in most of my favorite moments in this movie.
Yeah,
Pankow. He confronts the doctor because they figure out at the party that the doctor and the wife, and his line is awesome. It's how do we diagnose this one, Doc? Clinical asshole syndrome.
Incredible. And then he follows it up with, and you clinical.
Yes.
Thank you, they dropped that. I was pretty surprised.
That was so that's some good writing.
I was surprised.
Again, right on the nose.
I cannot pick between the scenes that the monkey's in. Bella is just amazing, and I think probably the scene where they take her away.
Mm.
Oh yeah, that was actually heartbreaking.
I think it's probably the best scene in the movie because I was completely invested in that and her character, and I believed her character more than anybody else. And it was just this great, tragic kind of romantic moment. It was really sad and got to me. So I thought that was brilliant. And then I guess my other favorite scene, the scene I enjoyed watching most, I guess, was actually all the monkeys destroying the lab. When they finally go crazy and break out and smash everything, I could watch that for 2 hours. I just think that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. That had a little energy. Like, the movie lacks a little energy. Romero's a little bit staid, it's a little bit waterlogged, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And the monkeys always inject this kind of spontaneity and this energy that it really needed. So,
yeah.
I like the scenes with the monkeys.
No, don't blame you.
Yeah.
It is the best, and it is the best part of the movie. You're right, Tony. He does an unbelievable job of making that every scene the monkey's in. He must have taken hundreds of hours of footage of that monkey, because every emotion, at least that it looks like it is making, is right on.
Yeah, it's perfectly done.
It's crazy. That was a creepy scene. One other scene that comes to mind is when the monkey first gets mad at John Pankow and the kitchen. And he's slamming the thing on the kitchen table. That was actually really frightening. More of that, please. Yeah.
Yes.
100%. Yeah, right. They sold the monkey.
So, Dan, before we rule on this movie and get to our top three, I'm going to ask for a special ruling from you, a separate vote. So, as you know, and if you're a new listener to the show, you might not, we end each episode, we give it a grade, a P for paranormal, meaning that we liked it and recommend it. Or a P for pass, no thanks, basically a thumbs down. But I'm going to have you rate this movie only on the animal involvement in the film, because you are our animal expert. So it's either a P for pet, meaning it's a good depiction, good use of animal, all that, or a P for pass, it didn't pass the mustard in terms of its pet use.
Okay. And I'll go back into history for this answer too. And I wasn't prepped for this until you just said it now. So appreciate it. When we did Pet Sematary, I would have given that a P for pet it's an example of, again, not a brilliant film, but a better film that if you didn't see pets directly in frame, this sort of spirit was everywhere, right? Mm. It had that sort of specter of animals or haunted animals everywhere. So it felt like, all right, pets were pervasive throughout this entire movie.
A lot of peas.
Good job. Particularly.
Wow.
This piece.
Wow.
Of film. So in this one, because of I felt like you had two parallel tracks going on that only occasionally met in the middle. I don't think it's a P for pet. I think that you had two separate movies going on at odds with each other sometimes. And I don't think so, because as we've all said, as Tony said, I want more monkeys. As you said, Maddie, Tony's review. No, it's an astute review. You can't disagree with it. We would have liked more of them, or have them more involved, or even from a directorial point of view. Again, I'm not, you guys are the directors. You have the director's eye, but as a viewer, just too many close-ups to make it feel like a movie of the week drama, and not enough wide shots. This man is a quadriplegic who's in an electric wheelchair at his home that has been outfitted, retrofitted to serve his life, right? Now he's got, all these gadgets, plus a monkey zooming around. I would have loved just a setup shot. It's a master shot, and more of that, of just, what the hell does this entire room look like? Okay, phones over there, the windows over there, the bathrooms over there, and this is the way, and his law books are over here. Again, setting it up, blending it, making it one cohesive space. And instead, with all the close-ups that I felt there were too many of, it felt like two separate movies. My answer is not a P for pet on this one.
Love it. Well done. And Tony, how about our P for paranormal rating? Is this going on the shelf? Monkey Shines.
P for pass. For me, on Monkey Shines, I definitely think it's worth watching. I loved it. I laughed hysterically. I'd forgotten a lot of things about it. I'll probably see it again, but it doesn't get a P for Paranormal.
I almost want to give it a P for Paranormal and put it on the shelf just out of pure, and we try not to do this. We try not to be the cynical film guys who are, you know, always snarky, but it is so damn funny. It really is. And it's so unintentionally funny. You know, the way he kills the monkey with his mouth. That scene is just, I mean, that alone, I want to put it on the shelf, but I just can't. There's too much wasted time of your life here in between to get to those funny moments. But again, I recommend it like Tony does in terms of if you want to just have some fun, but we can't put a movie like this on the shelf. So there you go. Let's get to our top three.
You are listening to the only podcast of its kind, hosted by two industry professionals. Host, actor, investigator, Maddie Blake.
I was slaying is what I was doing.
Actor, director, filmmaker, Anthony Arkin.
I'm just saying things to get health insurance.
Two friends with a love and passion for film and the paranormal.
I'm going to kill all of you.
Thoughtful analysis. Insider knowledge and intelligent conversation.
More cocaine on set is what I'm saying.
Find us on social media at Rated Paranormal.
Come on, kill me. Do it. I'm here.
To leave us a message, visit our homepage, anchor.fm/Rated Paranormal. Simply click message and let your voice be heard and click support to donate.
I hope you're tortured about it and that it bothers you.
Share the podcast and help grow the P4P community.
Who the hell is that? Shut the door.
Rated P for Paranormal, the best and worst of paranormal pop culture.
Boom. Well, obviously, thusly inspired by the titular monkey in Monkey Shines, we are going to focus on the top three little animal attacks in film history. These are attacks by smaller sized animals, no sharks, no bears, no larger dogs, just small dogs
only.
Such a shame.
Cocaine Bear was so good.
But this is what we do. We make them, these top three lists, a little more difficult. So, Dan, I don't know if you had a chance to prepare a list. We could start with our guest, Tony.
Yeah.
Do you have a number three? No, you're out.
Oh, no, I do. I've been busy cutting the film, Man's Best Friend, but I had some time this afternoon to look.
Oh, great. I didn't mean to interrupt any of yours.
So your number three, little animal attacks in film history, please. We got to memorialize the award first.
Yeah, I had an idea for it, but I don't want to step on anybody's toes with it. So that's the thing. It might bump somebody's thing out.
It's fine. We can come up with another one.
So I thought of the Nedry Award for Wayne Knight's interaction in Jurassic Park with the small dinosaur.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
We'll call it the Nedry, maybe.
That's really good. The Nedry Award. I love it.
About that little guy.
All right. Yeah. That's it. The Nedry Award. Little animal attack. Oh, Danny, you're number three of the Nedrys.
The more I thought of it, you know, it was like groups of animals as opposed to one, and I hope that's acceptable. It doesn't have to be one animal attack.
Perhaps so. No. Just,
you know, there's obviously the classics. My mind immediately went to Hitchcock and the birds, and I thought, well, no, that's too on the nose, but let me see. There's something similar, and I remember seeing a movie called Bats from 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tony's nodding his head. I feel mm-hmm. already more confident about this choice. I saw this. Believe it or not, with my Jason's my oldest boy, but he was like five at the time, and it was just something that was available for rent, and I was like, oh, let's try this, and it was terrible choice to show a five-year-old, but yeah. Still fun for me. Lou Diamond Phillips,
yes,
he plays a sheriff. He's got this not so great southern twang, but whatever, makes it work.
Lou Diamond's always bringing it.
He's still, in spite of the twang not working, it's good classic Lou Diamond Phillips. And it was, you know, it's about a swarm of genetically mutated bats that mm-hmm. terrorize this Texas town.
And that movie knows what its audience wants to see.
Yes. Well, there you go. And maybe that's why this, you know, mm-hmm. the idea of, yeah, was so fresh in my mind about give me more monkeys. Well, in this case, Bats does not disappoint. The best scene I'd like to point out, one of my favorites, I remember this because my kid, you know, was horrified and had to leave, but, he's hanging out at some bridge with some girl and there's some dialogue and, the bats are coming and, they run into his patrol car and so they can't penetrate the car. And they're getting swarmed by bats, killer bats. But they do find a way through the muffler exhaust pipe.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I'm watching this going, and I remember saying to Jason, like, yeah, they, you know, pipe's not, the muffler's not going to lead to the inside of the car. This just can't. No. Nope. No, it does.
Yeah. It goes right in.
Of course. Every muffler.
It's a direct line, apparently.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's where the skis come out the other side.
Of course. Works both ways. Yes. Awesome. Yeah. And they go in straight from the muffler exhaust pipe into the glove box, and that's where they pop out of. And they
a lot of people don't know. You gotta be careful.
So that's my number three choice, Bats. It was a fun. Good. It's a real fun movie.
Good call. I like that movie. Saw it a couple years ago. I watched it again, and it really held up.
I don't want to tell you how to do your job, Danny, but if you don't go after Lou Diamond Phillips for Man's Best Friend, then you're not doing it right. Tony, you're number three.
My number three is. From the movie Pink Panther Strikes Again.
Oh.
And it is the scene that Inspector Clouseau is going up to the hotel concierge at this little hotel in Europe. And there's a small dog down below. And he says, he asks the concierge, he goes, oh, Ed, does your dog bite? And he goes, no. And he bends down and the dog freaks out and bites. He goes completely insane. And he goes, I thought you said that your dog did not bite. And the guy says,
that is not my dog.
And it's the stupidest
I love it
joke gag you've ever seen. And it kills me every time I see it.
Hey, he asked the question. He answered it.
Yeah.
I love that. That's one of my dad's favorite series of films.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Loves Peter Sellers.
And grew up on it. So good.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. So good. So good.
I'm going to start. My number three is Will Ferrell as Elf trying to hug the real raccoon when he gets to New York City.
Okay.
And he thinks it's going to be a friendly raccoon like they exist in the North Pole. And he goes to hug it. Totally attacks him. Just always cracks me up.
Isn't the line, does someone need a hug? Is that the line?
Or... Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think he does say that. Yes.
All right. My number two is Piranha 3D 2010.
I mean, hey.
It's I love the original. It's
a great choice.
Freaked me out, even though it was a B movie and it was like, you know, meant to just sort of be silly and make fun of Jaws. I didn't get that as a kid, of course.
No.
I just enjoyed it for what it was.
Right.
But I loved Piranha 3D in 2010. Again, took my children to see it. Not a good idea, but they were a little older and, you know, it's fine. Jerry O'Connell scene. Everyone knows what happened to Jerry O'Connell in Piranha 3D. Tony knows.
That was a great moment. It's a great thing that they remade it. It was a big surprise to me that they made it as well and they took as much care making it as they did.
There was care. I felt like the cast was decent too. Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, they were really in on the gag. I mean, I think everybody was really in on how fun it was, and it was kind of in a weird way kind of sophisticated, you know, a sophisticated piece of trash.
That's a great way to put it. And for the audience that may not know what happens, he falls off a boat. Well, we know what piranhas do. They're killer piranhas. He falls off a boat. The piranhas mangle him. He's somehow pulled back up, but they basically attack to the lower half of his body, and he's on the deck of the boat. And they've clearly inserted him into the boat in order to make the gag work because he's got fake legs sticking out. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah.
They've got it set up to look like it's his legs that have been mangled. And his line is, they took my penis. They took my penis.
I mean, it's well established that this is the Citizen Kane of piranha attack movies. There's no doubt about that.
And the icing on the cake is that the penis, then there's a cutaway to the penis floating down to the sea and two piranhas fighting over it.
Yeah. And I still stand by the fact that this is a way classier, more thoughtful film than you think it is.
Mm. It was fun. It was fun. It was entertaining. It was fast paced. I loved it.
I think that it's not this Citizen Kane is the wrong reference. It's like the Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Because Piranha 1 is the Citizen Kane of Piranha. Movies. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Joe Dante killed it.
Yeah.
I'm just glad Danny's stopped saying penis. Tony, you're number two.
Never. My number two. It's a movie called Venom.
Ooh.
From 1977. I don't remember. I think it's about what it is. It's about a King Cobra that is lurking, that gets brought into a brownstone apartment complex, or just one brownstone house. And during a home invasion, during a hostage situation. So it's a great hostage movie involving the police coming and staking out the front of this place, and then what's happening inside it, which is this really cool hostage movie with Klaus Kinski and Oliver Reed and Susan George and Sterling Hayden, amazing cast. And this little kid who is the grandchild of the Sterling Hayden character, who's a real animal enthusiast, and his dad Sterling, or his grandfather Sterling Hayden, is a collector and an adventurer. And so they get shipped to the house. The wrong snake comes to the house and gets out during this home invasion. So it's great combo genre thing, and really, really fun and crazy, and kind of has the energy that I missed seeing in Monkey Shines, where even though they had a dual plot and two, and like kidnappers, it still was mostly just, where is that snake? And they really capitalized on that. Great. See? So Venom.
Love it. But you don't see the snake, but the snake is there. Right?
You do see it, and you see its POV, and it lurks, but you don't see it all the time. Every time you start a scene, you don't know if the snake could be under anywhere.
That would get a pee for pet.
Yeah. And also it's venomous and it will kill you instantly. So it's different than the monkey's got a limited range of how it can really kill you.
Right.
You know? And setting fire to stuff to me is a little bit like, I don't know if that was, show me.
I have to inject something that I forgot about when we're talking favorite scenes of Monkey Shines, is the monkey trying to inject her with the needle, and the little monkey paws, little fake monkey paws.
The needle
just kind of like dropping, but not quite injecting.
Not quite.
Oh my God, that was glorious.
It's like the Paul Rubens hands, the little tiny baby puppet hands.
It was like a Triumph the Insult comic dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Okay, my number two is the killer rabbit in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh wow,
it's my number one.
I'm sorry, no, Tony.
There you go. It's.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm thrilled.
That's beautiful. Right. Yeah, you guys have like an Ella and Alan Mann relationship.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, Tony, since let's get to your number one, Danny, and then Tony, you think of another like a 1A if you have any honorable mentions, as I stole your one.
Or you could both. Yeah.
Tony, Danny, your number one.
My number one is Creepshow, 1982. I love like anthology movies if they're well done. Love the Twilight Zone movie. I just love movies like that. And this one creeped the F out of me again as a kid. But the one that I thought of for here was, I had to go back and look. I knew what I had in mind, the cockroach scene, but I had to pull it up. So Mr. Pratt is so good. And his name is Upson Pratt, and he's played by E.G. Marshall. And he's basically a horrible boss. So as I'm looking back on it, I'm like, this is a great revenge on boss story, right? Mm-hmm. He's just a dickhead, but he's also a germaphobe, and he's locked up in this pristine penthouse apartment where he's afraid of, dirt or bugs or any of that stuff. Yes. But they're able to like sneak cockroaches into him to get back at him because he's so abusive to his employees. And it's just so well done. And again, it's not a feature film. It's one-fifth of a feature film, but it's a great little story, especially as the cockroaches start invading.
Such
a good one.
Yeah, leaves, goes to the panic room because he thinks he's going to be safe there, but then they start crawling into the panic room.
They're
and then
everywhere. They're on his so good. Phone.
It's, like, that's a ugh. Great call. That's an absolutely great call.
It's a great
call.
One, Danny.
Loved it.
Tony, you have a 1A since I stole your one?
Yeah, I'm going to go for 2003's Willard, starring Crispin Glover and his pet rat Ben. And that is actually a really good movie, I think. It's a remake, and they put a lot into it. Like, the filmmakers really cared about it. Crispin Glover's perfectly cast. And the rat's creepy. And the attacks are like, they have some impact. So I'm going to go with that.
I want to check the movie out. I've never seen it, but anytime Crispin Glover does something, it's always interesting, at least. My number one is from probably when I'm pressed to pick my favorite movie of all time. It's usually Rushmore, Wes Anderson, and it's the bee attack. When you know, Jason Schwartzman's character and Bill Murray's character in a war of attrition doing things to each other. And Bill Murray's staying in the hotel room because he's going through a divorce. And there's this just, it's one of my favorite sequences in movie history. Schwartzman pipes in bees into Bill Murray's room, and Bill Murray starts getting attacked by them and stung. And there's this glorious little piece of acting by Bill Murray where he's like, what? He's angry. And then he realizes that it's Max Fisher, and he looks and sees the little entrance, and this look of like, that's a great one, kid, comes over his face. You know, there's like this like begrudging, admiring respect for the kid. But then, and then it goes back to like, but wait a second, there's a room full of bees here, and it's all in facial expressions. It's just so great. And then that wonderful Who song kicks in, a quick one while he's away. And it's just like my favorite animal attack of all time, Rushmore.
Well done. Well done. That's a great scene.
Well, guys, boy, we did about 2 hours on a movie that probably warranted about 16 minutes of discussion. So good job.
True. True.
We did our homework.
Danny Schachner, where can people find you? Your handles and all that?
Just Puppy Bull Ref, Dan Schachner, however you want to find me. Reach out. Let me know what you're doing. Show me a picture of your dog.
Where can people see Man's Best Friend?
It's coming. Yeah, I'll be coming to theaters April 1st as soon as we get a distributor and a theater.
Excellent. 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 That is so exciting.
So just tiny details we're working on.
Tiny details. Dan, we look forward to having you back very soon. Hopefully, you know what would be nice? Keep your eyes open for a new animal paranormal movie coming out. And maybe we can do that because we've done a couple old ones with you. Let's do like a new one.
We'll see what's coming down the pike.
All right. Tony, next week we will review our short film, Pound Ridge. So again, Tony and I are going to figure out how to put this up on our social media, and we will do that, or at least a link to it. So make sure you watch it so you know what we're talking about. We promise it's going to be fun. We might have some people that were involved with it on as guests, I think.
Oh, for sure, yeah. No, yeah. Dave. Got to get Dave on.
Got to get Dave Carlson, who shot it and is in it. So please, please, please watch it, because you will definitely have a better listening experience having watched it than if not. For Tony Arkin and the great Dan Schachner, the Puppy Bowl ref himself from Animal Planet, thank you again, Dan. This is B4B. We'll see you next time, you monkeys.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga, or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
Two things about these two butts. All I even needed is
something like this. It's an awful thing to see in the beginning of a movie. Oh, it's,
is it?
Scrotum on rug? Question mark?
Mm-hmm. Why does she pee on him?